Hello and welcome to A Marvelous Lunch Break. On today's show, where did all the real people actors go? It's time to watch 2018's Into the Spider-Verse, a movie about a potentially world-ending threat in New York that can only be stopped by someone wearing a costume containing either red or blue, putting a goober into a hole. Sound familiar? That's superheroes movies for you. Anyway, what's more bloated as well? Wilson Fisk soldiers or shoulders? Soldiers? We're like, you know, I've not spoken to people in weeks. Let me try that again. What's more bloated? Wilson Fisk's shoulders or me after 5 weeks in lockdown? As funny as that. And given there's no half-baked love interest, does that mean that the defining feature of Spider-Man movies is train scenes? We'll be discussing all this and the rest of the movie. But first, joining me today, as always, is Miss Marvel herself, Anna Harrison. Anna, how are you?
I'm so good, Dan. What's up, Danger?
And someone who could use a little bit of CGI magic, Martin. It's Agent Martin Carter.
Sorry, can you do that again? I didn't hear it.
I said, oh God, this is not a great episode of the podcast. I said, and someone who could use a little bit of CGI magic, it's Agent Martin Carter.
Well, I just wanted to make sure both me and the listeners could just hear how rude you're going to be to me.
But that's it, you know, usually I'm completely cordial to you other than that one line. It's good to be back. How are you both? Are you both feeling good?
Really good. I can't believe this is our last official episode.
What?
Coronavirus of the movies we're watching, coronavirus has robbed us of the other cinematic experiences we were going to be having. It's all coming to an end, Dan.
Well, but it's not over yet. We've got to talk about Into the Spider-Verse first.
Hell yeah.
I've got a quiz prepared for you later on, and let me tell you, it's short, but it is brutal. It's going to be the person who gets one answer right wins. So listeners, you stay and you can play along with that, and you know, we'll trust you. Let us know if you score higher than Martin and Anna on that little quiz. Later on, it's all about Into the Spider-Verse, and I didn't give you the heads up to pay extreme attention to small details. So, you know, okay. We're in for a ride. Before we get into it, just hello as well to all of you who are listening. If this is the first time you're tuning in, crazy time to be joining us. but, you know, welcome. Or if you're back from old, do know there are spoilers in the podcast that we're going to talk about the whole of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, plus movies that have happened before in the Spider-Man canon, I guess. Probably we'll also spoil other Marvel movies, other X-Men movies. We might dip into spoiling other TV shows as well. So if you don't want anything spoiled, basically, you know, keep listening, and I'll do my best to give you the heads up. Remember, though, you know, if you do like having things spoiled, you can review us over on any platform, pretty much, and subscribe to us so you can get more of this in your ears more regularly. You can also follow us on our Instagram account. Anna, what is the details?
A Marvelous Lunch Break.
And speaking of Instagram, I hear that we've got a message from a listener this week.
We do, yeah. So, as you'll see at the end of the episode, we give our personal Instagrams as well, and this person quite kindly slid into my DMs. Jamie, hi Jamie, I think from Texas. I don't know where I've suddenly got that in my mind from. Maybe I looked at his profile. Anyway, so Jamie says, hi Anna and Martin and Dan, love the pod. Really sad that you won't be we won't be getting the chance to talk about Black Widow, Eternals, and New Mutants. Yeah, really sorry about that last one, definitely. but really been enjoying the pod. The 60 seconds has gotten way better. And looking forward to having you guys all together again, especially because I've been missing the snack segment of your podcast. I've been missing that segment as well. What do you think is Spider-Man's ultimate quarantine snack?
Ouch.
Love, Jamie.
Spider-Man's ultimate quarantine snack.
Yeah, I will call him out. Great message. Thank you so much for writing, Jamie. Obviously, we'd love to get messages from fans, opinions, questions, constructive criticism. We want it all. But I will call him, like, I do wish he had specified which Spider-Man he was referring to. I'm assuming he means Miles, because...
Well, I mean, we could do all of them. Let's have a think about this.
Why don't we do one each?
Okay.
We can take Spider-Man each.
Okay.
I want to take Andrew Garfield.
Okay. You're taking Andrew Garfield. You sound like you've got it prepared, mine, so just hit us with Andrew.
Oh, God.
What, you really want to take Andrew Garfield, but you haven't got it prepared? Okay.
Yeah.
I think Tobey Maguire, right, is like, I think he's pretty middle of the road. You know, he's, if it was crisps, it'd be like ready salted, you know, maybe he'd pop to a salt and vinegar, or if he was feeling fancier sensations. But, you know, if we're thinking like a proper snack, I think he's probably like, I don't know, like a plain donut, you know what I mean? Because he is very New York, you know what I mean? He's very like, he's very New York, even though he's Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man, Peter Parker. I can see him walking down the street, chasing the bus, and like dropping a donut or something.
Yeah.
You see, I was gonna say pretzels for Andrew Garfield, which again I think is quite a New York.
Very New York.
Yeah, I think either like a full real pretzel or a bag of like pretzel chips.
Okay. I feel like surely Andrew Garfield needs a bit more of like an emo snack, like,
what's like an emo snack?
Like a black cupcake. You know how like black frosting.
Oh yeah, he's been down the fancy. He's been down the fancy bakery.
Yeah,
got himself like, you know.
I think he's quite into latte art as well.
Oh yeah, good shout. Yes, Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man, Peter Parker, latte, fancy latte art.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
what about Tom Holland?
Let's see. I think he would have quite like a fun sort of lighthearted snack, something that he would sort of like grab from a vendor as he was sort of swinging by and say thanks. So maybe like I mean, obviously it's got to be a churro, like, you know, we know how much he loves a churro, and what a great thank you that is to our Spider-Man. But I do also think that, you know, he'd be really into any kind of New York street food, zipping up a hot dog, grabbing a bagel. You know, he loves his squished down sandwiches. So I think any sort of like New York street food that he could like squish and then eat up on top of one of the buildings would be the Tom Holland Spider-Man snack.
I think the hot dog is a good shout.
So speaking of today's then, Miles Morales, I wonder if Miles Morales is like, you know, he seems like a bit younger than the other Spider-Man. You know, even if we're told to believe otherwise, I see him as like a big, like, you know, like an oversized bag of like Cheetos or something, or like a, you know, like a huge, you know, one of those like crisps, like, I don't know what the equivalent in America is. I don't know, you can guide me, but like in the UK we have things like, you know, like Discos or like Space Raiders that are like a crisp but also fun.
I think you're spot on there, Dan. I think I could definitely see him going for some sort of like Cheeto, like the newest kind of trendy Cheeto brand, like maybe like a Tabasco Cheeto, or, you know, some of like the interestingly flavored classic crisp or snack.
I can see that. It fits well with the dorm room and like the, you know, the whole vibe. Okay, there we go. If you've got a better idea of what Spider-Man might like, then send us a message, please. But first and foremost, we've got to start this episode with Anna's 1 minute roundup of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. We crushed it last time for Venom, not surprising because the plot was wafer thin. but that's not to discredit you in any way. You did great work. So let's set you up. You've got 60 seconds on the clock for your 1 minute roundup of Into the Spider-Verse. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. And 3, 2, 1, go.
All right, let's do this one last time. We meet the one and only Spider-Man, but forget about him. This is super smart, creative, kind of awkward Miles Morales' story. After being bit by a neon spider, flailing his way through power discovery, and witnessing Kingpin's brutally murdering Peter Parker, Miles decides to novelty store suit up and keep his promise to thwart evil portal screwiness. With great ability comes great accountability. Luckily, all dimensions schlubby Peter B. Parker's on the scene to lend a hand, although his atoms are pretty scrabbly. Their chaotic mission to get the new goober success thanks to the arrival of Spider-Gwen. And she's not the only dimension hopper waiting for them at Aunt May's. Peter Parker, Penny Parker, and Spider-Man Noir. Spider-People versus bad guys battle leads to the tragic death of Miles' uncle, and everyone, including Miles, doubting his ability to be Spider-Man. Peter B. decides to sacrifice himself to send everyone home, but after a leap of faith and badass costume change, Miles joins the epic final boss battle. We lose our robot friend, but Miles sends his spider gang home, saves all the dimensions, and Venom strikes the hell out of Kingpin, and now he's his dimension's one and only Spider-Man, and reminds us that anyone can wear the mask.
Yay! I was like, here we're on about Fisk again. I was like, this is gonna go way over, and then suddenly
that was Anna, that was great. Seconds. I would like to commend the copywriting and the articulation of that. That was exceptional.
That was really good. I understood.
I really owed it to this movie. I love this movie. It needed a good 60 seconds.
Yeah, I think that was exceptional work. You very much, you're on a roll in a minute, right? As we get to the you know, the climax of the season.
Good.
But, you know, a win's a win. Take that W and enjoy it. So let's kick off with the cast, shall we? You know, I didn't realize until my rewatch of this movie how busy this cast is, right? Mm. It's like busy. Full of people that you're like, I know who they are, and also full of people like, oh, I know who they are. Do you know what I mean? Like, you need, there's this weird middle ground. So, let's go through it top to bottom. Shameik Moore as Miles Morales.
Yay.
Great job. Great work there. Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker. So are we all familiar? Because these are a lot of names who, like, I know their face, but I don't know their name.
So this is like old Peter Parker.
Yeah, slubby Peter Parker.
So yeah, Jake Johnson is like the guy from
New Girl.
I don't know what his name in that is. Is it like
Nick?
Nick in New Girl. Yeah. If you've ever seen that.
I thought he was so great in this. He was like perfectly cast, and like by all accounts the kind of persona of like Peter B. Parker is a little bit how he is in real life as well. Like, he's someone who, like, he doesn't like leaving his home. He only like does interviews and stuff if there's like a press junket like happening in that area. Like, he doesn't like to fly out for things. But I think they sort of perfectly captured this kind of downtrodden but ultimately like wants to do good, like wants to be good. I mean, all his scenes with Miles, like their rapport, the way they spoke to each other, the end when like he's so excited for Miles, he's like, good job Miles, he's like, do I want kids? It's so good. Such a good job.
So we've got Jake Johnson as P.B. Parker. As I said, the majority of these people I didn't even pay attention to the like roster on my first watch. And on the second dip, here we go. They're all coming to the surface. So we've got Hailee Steinfeld as Gwen Stacy. So from Pitch Perfect fame, plus other movies. I know her from Pitch Perfect, but apparently she's been in more successful movies than that, which is just impossible for me to imagine. We've got Mashala Ali as Uncle Aaron. I mean, already been in Marvel as Cottonmouth in Luke Cage, if anyone's watched that, and
pushed
it in that role. So, brilliant. And isn't he due to be back in the MCU as something else? Or have I completely made that up in my mind?
I don't know. Maybe.
I got the feeling that he was, like, linked with something. Who knows? Anyway, next one up that we've got. Oh, Blade! Yeah, he was cast in Blade for Disney Plus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right. Oh. As Blade.
Awesome.
So that's gonna that's be awesome. Sweet. We've got Brian Henry as Jefferson Davis. We've got Lily Tomlin as Aunt May.
Yes. Awesome. Apparently.
Crazy, right?
apparently, like, animators, like, the sort of storyboard for that, when they designed the Aunt May character, they apparently had, like, Lily Tomlin in mind. So they were really, bonkers. Really thrilled when she said yes.
Absolute bonkers. I've just while browsing, complete sidetrack, is I've seen that Mahershala Ali's casted in the TV adaptation of Invincible, which is the greatest superhero comic book of all time, which has J.K. Simmons listed in it as one of the main characters, and that makes me extremely excited. If none of you have ever read Invincible, like, stop reading all of the superhero books and just go read the hell out of that. Written by Robert Kirkman, who wrote The Walking Dead, and everyone knows how amazing The Walking Dead is, and I'm not alone in thinking that Walking Dead is his second best work after Invincible. It's incredible. Side tangent there, you know. There's a crossover issue with Invincible and Spider-Man, which is where the linkies are coming in my head. But that doesn't matter because it's not canon. Zoe Kravitz, daughter of Lenny, as Mary Jane.
Yeah, good.
John Mulaney as Spider-Ham. I'm not a fan of I'm not a fan of his comic routines usually, but I mean, what a voice.
Perfect for Spider-Ham. Perfect.
Yeah. We've got Kimiko Glenn as Penny Parker, who looks to have done loads of voice stuff. I don't watch Orange is the New Black, but a character called Brooke in Orange is the New Black, if either of you watched that.
I was just here for the Big Hero 6 vibes.
Nice. We've got, of course, Nicolas Cage as Spider-Man Noir, which is like, you know, you're looking down this cast list and you're like, all right, okay, we're getting fairly Nicolas Cage. With mental.
And just like, again, just pitch perfect. Like, it's, I mean, he was probably one of my absolute favorite parts of the film, but I could just think of like so many lines. Like, every moment of him was just like gold, like, even down to like, you know, when the fight's happening, he's like, we don't pick the ballroom, we just dance. And
I loved it.
His character, have you guys seen the Lego Batman film?
No.
Yes. Yeah.
So, okay, Dan, you have to watch it. It's great. It's not what you think it's going to be, but he really reminded me of Lego Batman, where he kind of takes everything too seriously, and that's like where the ironic comedy for it is great.
Because Lego Batman's Will Arnett as well, isn't it? And he's got that, he puts on that similar sort of gruff voice, yeah. Mm-hmm. I do need to watch that. I do need to pay more attention to the Lego movies, definitely. season 4. we've got Catherine. This list is like still got plenty of life left in it. We've got Catherine Hahn as Doc Ock. So
yes, yeah. Like,
my favorite Catherine Hahn role is in Parks and Recreation.
Totally.
Or in Step Brothers. Let you guys pick, but Jennifer Barclay in Parks and Rec is a classic character.
I didn't really like Doc Ock in this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was the weakest bit for me was her character.
I thought that was such a good reveal. I love that reveal of her being Doc Ock in this universe.
It's great. Liv Schreiber, the second time I've struggled to say that name in this podcast, previously of Sabretooth fame, now of Wilson Fisk fame, putting on the pounds. Just crazy. Chris Pine as Peter Parker, so the original blonde-haired Peter Parker. Mm. I'm at the point now where I need to press C more to go to the next list of people. But when you go further down, obviously, you know, we've got your big names in here, like your Stan Lees. But there's a few cameos that really pop out. You've got Oscar Isaac as interesting person number one. Don't know who that is. Obviously, I know who Oscar Isaac is, but, you know, I'm not...
Well, everyone's going to have to stick around for our post-credits to hear more about that.
Oh, wow. You got, you know, Post Malone, who was on the soundtrack, did some of the voices for A Bystander. And then the rest of the list is just full of those, like, oh, I've seen them in that. This, you know, no one really, I feel, worth spending the time on, because we've gone through the main characters of the movie. But just overall, what's your feelings on the cast list? Do you think this is do you think it's too much, too little, you know?
Well, I mean, I think the whole cast is just masterful in this. And this is definitely one of those movies that, you know, like in the lead up to kind of Infinity War and Endgame, like our kind of big issues were, or our concerns were always like, how are they possibly going to breathe enough life into characters when you've got such a crowded field? And at least in like Infinity War and Endgame, at least you'd already been introduced to these characters, you already knew them. Whereas this one, it'd be so easy to see this roster, even just like the, you know, the poster of all the different spider people and their supporting characters, and think like, this is just going to be a headache on a screen. Like, how am I possibly going to come to know these characters and like give a damn about what's happening to them if there are so many? But I think they just did such an amazing job. Like, the way they introduced each spider person with their little backstory, you know, do this one more time over and over again. And I think like the strength of the voices that they picked for the supporting roles, I think having someone like Mahershala Ali doing Prowler, having like Lily Tomlin do Aunt May, it kind of meant that the fact that they had such limited screen time, their voice performance gave them enough like gravitas and emphasis that they felt fleshed out. They felt like real characters. I think it was, yeah, top to bottom, just amazingly well done.
And I also think that in this film, the script and the story and the acting all lends itself really nicely to each other. And I think in some of the MCU films, and probably a lot of the Spider-Man films and X-Men films, we see great actors being given terrible dialogue to try and do something with. And actually, this is expertly written as well as expertly acted, I think. Mm.
Well, I mean, like, I think the thing that gets me about, like, we might as well get into this real early, because this is going to affect a lot of my judgments of this whole movie. But I'm not a fan of, like, the old animated flick. Like, cartoons just, you know, it's so strange that for someone who's into comic books and movies, that, like, the animated movie bit just doesn't feel right for me. Like, I'm trying to work my way through a few things at the minute. Like, I'm trying to, since they're all on Netflix, I'm trying to work my way through like the Studio Ghibli movies, which I've never watched. I'm really enjoying that. But there's something about like cartoon animation, which is quite synonymous with like superheroes, that I just never really got along well with. I don't think I watched much cartoons as a kid. And then growing up, like, you know, animated movies and like adult animated TV shows, you know, like your Bob's Burgers and your Archer and all that sort of things, just never really excite me. So when this was, you know, everyone was saying, oh, how amazing it is, I was like, is it that good? You know, you might love it, that's fine. But I didn't go see this in the cinema because I had such hesitation about animated stuff I never really gel with. But I mean, this is it. You know, someone will say, oh, well, if you just paid attention, all animation is as good as this. But it feels like this is, has had so much money thrown at it. And when you look at like some of the news articles about it, you know, the amount of resource that Sony put behind this movie is like an animation level that is just so rarely achieved. You know, especially for big name properties like Spider-Man, that is, you know, I think it is just really visually like gripping. You know, I mean, there's always stuff moving on the screen. You always sort of feel like you're on a different panel, that you're, you know, sort of, they've really been able to do that, like bring the pages of a comic book to life sort of thing, rather than just animating it, which really gripped me in this movie. But it also made me think a lot about an interesting opening question, sort of early on question for you is, do you think this movie would be, if we take the storyline and we drop this into a live action Spider-Man movie and say, okay, this is the plot of Spider-Man 3 or whatever, do you think it'd be like as good, or do you think the plot only holds up because of the like delivery format of the movie?
That's a really interesting question. So I I don't think this could have worked in the form that it is right now as live action. I think the animation just allowed for so much creativity, and kind of really capturing this feel of the comic book. And you know, you talk about like the kind of the money, you're like so much, this is such a high budget for like an animated film. But I think you can really see like how that money was spent in a really smart way. Like they hired people that knew what they were doing. And I really like that when this movie came out, when it was like finally out, a lot of artists who've been involved in it were like, the embargo had lifted. So they finally were able like to say like, oh my God, I'm so excited to show you what I've been doing. And actually there's a couple of people that I follow, and some people, a person in particular I went to high school with who does stuff for Marvel, and he did some of the work on Spider-Gwen. And just the unbelievable outpouring of like the artists being like, this was such a joy and I'm so happy I got to be a part of this. Look at like, this is what I did for this. And this, you know, even if they were really just tiny bits. And I think the people that worked on it, you could really feel like a lot of like the love and passion for the craft in the way this movie was put together. And I think also because it allowed for like, oh my God, like the scene in which Miles is like flailing through his powers discovery, when he's like, you know, he's sticking to Wanda, and then he, you know, in his room, and he's sticking to things, and then when he's like, he's outside, he's shirtless, and he's stuck to birds, and he's like slamming against the windows, like in the cinema, I was crying with laughter, like absolutely crying with laughter. But at the same time, like there was like, if that had been a real person, like stuck to pigeons, slamming against windows, I mean, it's funny to think about, but I think it would have just been like, oh my God, this is so dumb. This is too much. It's too much. So I think this allowed for creativity and over the topness in a way that like live action comic book movies, like they always seem to need a bit of grounding. And we always say like, when they don't ground themselves, then we don't seem to like it as much. So yeah, I'm so glad they did this as a cartoon, as an animated feature rather than live action.
I think that's really interesting because, you know, the MCU in particular has always made a point of grounding itself, you know, in like the early Thor, they're like, you call it science, we call it magic, or whatever the stupid phrase that he has is. And I think it could definitely get away with more of the kind of slapstick, more of the kind of boundary pushing stuff. But I thought what was really interesting in it is the first three spider people that you meet are the most ordinary ones. Mm-hmm. So you've got Miles, you've got old Peter Parker, and you've got Spider-Gwen. And you kind of get used to those three. And I think those three probably could work in a live action. But I think what the film is really clever at doing is allowing you to get comfortable with those and then throwing in Looney Tunes, Sin City, and Big Hero 6 or Sailor Moon. And it's like, we've eased you into multiverse, and now we're just going to go to like the full extent of what an animated film can allow. And I think that was really smart. I think if you'd have just dropped six of them on you straight away, you'd have been overwhelmed, in the same way that, you know, in the first Avengers film, we're gradually introduced to the Hulk and to Hawkeye and to all the other people in it as well.
Do you think that the story itself was rich enough as well? So, I don't want to judge this movie by the live-action standards, but, you know, we're comparing it to the other Spider-Man movies in the universe. So, do you think the storyline itself is strong and deep enough for, you know, potentially what another one of the other movies would have been? Or do you think that we are, you know, it uses a lot of those sort of creative ways to plug time almost?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think you're right. I think in some ways this plot was a little bit more simplistic than you'd seen a live action movie, because I think they did focus on kind of the characters a bit more and less, because like, if, at the end of the day, it's sort of like a standard kind of MacGuffin plot, isn't it? Got to get this thing in order to fix this thing and save the world.
Yeah, and they even trivialize it in the movie, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think the reference to the thing as like a goober and everything is just goober, like, nah, yeah. it's a plot.
Yeah, I think even says, like, there's always a goober, there's always a thing, you know?
I think, yes, that is true, but I think what this film is really successful at is delivering those things that we want from a Spider-Man film. You know, if we're not comparing it to a live action, fine, but if we're comparing it to what we want and comparing it to the other Spider-Man films we've just watched, you know, we always say we want to understand the villain's motivation. And actually, I understood it really quickly, and it was something that you could immediately kind of make sense of and get your head around. You want, you know, there's, and even like the treatment of the Uncle Ben character was done in such a smart way that, you know, there was that kind of reveal, which I absolutely loved. And there was, you know, there was that moment where all the other spider people were like, oh yeah, I lost so-and-so. You know, the treatment of the Uncle Ben bit of Spider-Man story was done, you know, in one of the best ways possible that we've seen. So I think it's not about comparing it to live action, but I think all those component parts that we, throughout the past couple of seasons, have said needs to be right for a good superhero film, this does that incredibly well. And if that means that there's a bit of a thinner plot, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I do think the focus was definitely more on the characters, like who they are. And like, I thought like, the two main arcs are obviously it's Miles and it's Peter B. Parker. Like, it is kind of a shame we didn't get to see this in cinema day, because I just remember like that final bit of, you know, Miles, he's done the costume change, he's on the building and does that leap off of it, and like, you know, he leaps, but he's actually kind of like rising up as he's like falling, and like just it being such the perfect moment for what's happened to his character, that it had such a big impact for me. Like I remember feeling like really emotional in the cinema. And then the same for Peter B. Parker, like when you get introduced to him, you know, he's at a real low point. And then by the end, when, you know, it's Miles telling him, it's a leap of faith, man, you gotta go home, stop being so scared. And him just like letting go and kind of giving into that. I think the character arcs were really well done in this story, I think.
Yeah, I think it's the way that they made so many like Spider-Man tropes sort of feel non-obvious was great. You know, like you said, the sort of the Uncle Ben scene, but also like the fact that this is an origin story, and that there's like, you know, his usual sort of villains roster. You know, you've got Green Goblin, Wilson Fisk, Field the Bird. It's like, oh, come on, I've seen all these people before. But actually, you know, it doesn't feel like you're, you know, just getting a rewrite of something else. It feels completely different. And, you know, one thing I was thinking about as well is like, oh, well, which Peter Parker is the Peter Parker that we know? You know, is it this? Is it the blonde one? Is it the brown one? You know, but actually, I'm like, actually, it's neither the blonde-haired or the brown-haired one or any of the others. Like, they've made it feel completely separate to anything that we've seen going on before. I think it's just a really inspired way that they've done it. I think it was, you know, such a bold move to put out, like, a feature animated Spider-Man movie in the midst of Infinity War land. Yeah. Here we go.
Well, apparently, I mean, if the rumors are to be believed, at one point, supposedly, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield were kind of in talks, like, as part of this film, to be like, okay, are we going to do a cameo with these guys? Are we going to reference that they're part of, like, this multiverse as well? And I'm so, so glad they didn't. I mean, I could see how that would work, especially if it was just, like, a kind of quick, you know, a flash into another multiverse, and you hear their voice or something. But I think by keeping all the Peter Parkers in this one, I mean, not completely separate, because there was obviously kind of references to things that happened in the other movies, but not using those voices, I think was really smart, because it allowed us just to kind of completely remove ourselves from kind of all the hang-ups people might have had about the way those other Spider-Men were portrayed, and just give us something a little bit different and fresh while still using Spider-Man elements that we're comfortable and familiar with, which I think was really smart, really smart. And that doesn't mean, you know, if there's a second one, maybe we will get a Garfield Maguire cameos at some point.
Well, we have the little dancing sequence at the start from Spider-Man 3.
You know, like in Family Guy, where occasionally they'll like accidentally walk into like a live action shop.
Oh yeah.
Maybe like Spider Ham will just appear at the top of the like collapsing building when Venom and Spider Man are going at it in Spider Man.
Oh man.
So do you think this movie has shown so one of the things that like it's always talked about is that Marvel, MCU Marvel, built up this like roster superhero movie over like a few individual movies and then a feature like roster movie. And then, you know, DC tried it the other way, Warner Brothers tried it the other way with DC movies, with the Justice League, where they pretty much went, right, it's Justice League and we're doing them all together. And it kind of, no one got any screen time. You think that this is like well, here's how you could get, because essentially they have like six superheroes all being introduced in the space of the movie, all of them unknown to the audience, really. You know, they're Spider-Man, but they're not. Do you think that there's a little bit in there about how they can mash loads of different new characters together?
I mean, I would think like going forward, it'll be really interesting to see, because supposedly there is going to be a Spider-Man 2. And I think like the really interesting thing they've done here is they've made a lot of like interchangeable parts. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we never saw Penny, Peter Parker, or Spider-Man Noir ever again. Like, I would expect them obviously to bring back Miles and Spider-Gwen, and then possibly Peter B, or maybe that would just be a cameo. I think what they've done here is a really like set up a really good precedent for just being like, let's just throw some stuff in, and sort of as long as the dialogue is good, as long as like there's enough of a story to kind of hold this together, I think they've kind of done what neither DC nor Marvel could get away with anymore, and that's just, let's just have some fun and sort of see what happens.
Yeah, and I think that's where they might be going with the Eternals, is there's just like this race or this group of people who all are super. But I think the closest thing we got to establishing that team really quickly was Guardians, like the pace at which they suddenly became a group of five and you were rooting for them all. And I think the important thing there is comedy. And I think that's why Justice League perhaps didn't work, is because it was so serious and it was so like just a complete Debbie Downer. I think in order to kind of suspend your disbelief for not caring about every single one of them in depth, is because it's a bit lighter, perhaps. So I think that's why this, and obviously they're all iterations of the same character, which you all kind of know anyway, so it's fine. But no one cares about Spider-Ham.
So out of all the other spiders then, which was your favourite? We've got the blonde-haired Peter Parker, we've got Miles Morales, we've got the brown-haired Peter B. Parker, we've got Penny Parker, Peter Parker, we've got Spider-Man Noir, and who are missing? Of course, Spider-Gwen, Gwen Stacy.
Oh, God, that's so hard. I mean, from a character point of view, I really just, I flipping love Peter B. Parker, just like his kind of schlubby, defeatist attitude, but he was so funny. I really loved him as a character, but if I had to be one of the spider people, I think I'd want to be Penny. I've always wanted to have like a really big robot to kind of just like be my bestie and sort of hang out inside it. And she always looked really cozy whenever she was doing anything, eating her snacks. Yeah, I think I'd want to be Penny Parker. That's my go-to.
Dan, can I guess yours after I've said mine?
Yeah, if you want, you can, sure.
So I'm pretty similar, which is boring, isn't it? So I really liked Peter B. Parker, and I feel like 2018 was a good year for superheroes with beer bellies. I'm sure that, yeah. Is that not the same year as Endgame?
It's 2018, it's same year as Infinity War.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
This was the start of the trend, if anything.
It was the start of it. And I feel like if I was trying to squeeze into one of those Spider-Man suits, I too would have a little bit of a belly, especially in the middle of quarantine. So I really liked him. I really liked his introduction, you know, where they go back into everyone's comic books. It really reminded me of Deadpool. I don't know why. I thought that was really fun. And I also want to say, I really like Penny. But I also, I think if I wanted to live in one of the other universes, I'd want to live in Gwen Stacy's, because it's that kind of neon, hyper-realistic. That was pretty cool.
I'd tell you one thing about Peter B. Parker, which you just said, the Deadpool thing. Like, I'm completely with you on that. Like, the way that he was, like, knelt on the bed, like, with his face down, and the way he was crying in the shower, it was very, like, you know, Deadpool having a breakdown. Sort of like over the top, you know, really caricatured breakdown. Yeah, completely with you on that. I was thinking the exact same thing. Is that's a Deadpool shot. Yeah.
What was your guess? What was your guess for Dan Martin?
I know the answer to this. So I'm ready to hear your pitch.
So I think you like Spider-Man Noir. Ooh. And Peter Parker.
Oh, I mean, Spider-Man Noir, I like. And when the original like Spider-Verse comic came out, yeah, all over Spider-Man Noir. What a like exciting concept, really. Like I was thinking when I was watching this, I was like, you know what I would love in like a fantasy land is Spider-Man Noir and Captain America, like team, but like against the Nazis. You know what I mean? I was like, I could defo be 100% about that.
And Frank Miller has to be in the driving seat.
Oh, yeah. I'm in it. You know, Captain America, for some reason, is wearing a slightly strange suit and that's never revealed. And, you know, it just all over it. But I think I'm probably a curveball on this one. Because I think Miles is cool. And I completely agree with Peter B. Parker. He's, like, great. For all the reasons you specified, the two contenders that I put into this mix is OG Peter Parker in this movie is like gives me those like Spider-Man feels. You know what I mean? Like when he's in the big chamber and he's like saving Miles from like falling, and he's fighting Green Goblin, and he's all over the place. Like, there's something about it which is like a game Spider-Man. I was like, that's Peter Parker right there. That's some great shit.
That was great. His little quips as well, like that. You're absolutely right. Like that is Spider-Man. Like the bit when he was like thrown under the collider, and he's like lying there for a minute. He's just like, oh, I'm so tired.
It is Spider-Man. That's like the even though they've made it not feel like, okay, it isn't trying to be Tom Holland, it isn't trying to be Andrew Garfield, that sort of thing. They've nailed Peter Parker in that moment, I feel, and Spider-Man. But given that that's a bit of a cop-out and that's not really one of the like spider team of the movie, I feel like in comic book realms, there's a little bit of a weird sort of like, not weird, because I mean she's a great character, but like I think that there's some like definitely, you know, cringier, you know, admirations of Gwen Stacy as Spider-Gwen, and when she was originally introduced in Spider-Verse in the comics, I was like, okay, this is cool, but I never really understood why she was so popular. Mm. And then she, you know, she got spun out into her own solo comics, and I was like, I get that it's interesting that it's Gwen Stacy, and it's like the flip reversey of what happened in her universe, and then her suit looks cool, and she's now here. But it always felt like they were like crowbarring a solution to having more, you know, gender diversity in our main roster of superheroes. I think it was probably a time when Marvel as a comic book company were going through a lot of sort of like, they're having an identity crisis of Marvel movies and comic books, and they were trying to change everything in the comic books so that it was like completely different to the movies. So it was like, rather than two things that are fairly similar, we're going to have the movies that are very similar to what we've done for years, and we're going to have comic books do the most insane thing that you can think. Now the thing is now a wall, and you know, like just weird shit. And Spider-Gwen kind of came in at that moment in time, and I was very like resistant to it. But this movie has like sold me on the concept of Spider-Gwen. Like,
all right.
You know, I think the idea that she's like young but doesn't have like the hang-ups of Gwen Stacy in, you know, 616 universe is really refreshing, and I think that's where the comic book suffered with it. So I think, you know, definitely when lockdown ends, when comic books come back into circulation, that's weeklies, you know, go check out your local comic book store for the deliveries on paperbacks that they're doing, you know, keep them alive, definitely. But when weeklies start again, I'll be looking for the next sort of jumping on point for Spider-Gwen, and I'm going to give it another try because I think there's probably some mileage there that, you know, if they've taken pointers from this movie, I think is, yeah, it's a really exciting character. And, you know, I can see now, I don't think this happened before, but I can see how as a result of this, there's like an adoration by people who are getting into comics and getting into movies as a result, or getting into comic books as a result of movies for Spider-Gwen, because, I mean, like, she ticks every superhero box in this. Like, she's powerful to the point of she shows up her elders. You know, Peter B. Parker and Miles Morales are like left in the dust. She's got that mentor thing in that she's looking after Miles, she's looking out for what's best for him, but she's like wise beyond her age. Like, she's meant to be the same age as Miles, but like she's completely clued in and he's a little bit like puberty. And then, you know, I mean, her costume is sick as fuck. Whoever designed that back in the early days of, oh, we should do an alternate universe Gwen Stacy was, yeah, you know, they need, I'm sure they've got it, but they need a bonus, because that is one of the, it's like original, you know, I mean, it's one of the most original superhero costumes that I've seen for a long, long time. Like, it's not a riff on anything else. It's not another Spider-Man suit, but white and black. It's got like the hood and like the ballet pumps and like you know, the black and white. It's just spot on.
Yeah, she was so cool in this. I really did like her in it. I thought like everything they did with her, like the way she moves, the sort of ballet element, the way she fights was so great. And I loved how each character, and hers was so cool, had like their own sort of like little like intro music and their own kind of riff. You know, when she was like going back over like who she is and everything, it shows that she's in a rock band. And when she's first introduced, and anytime it's like just a Gwen moment. Oh my God, sorry, my dog is going absolutely mental right now. She is parkouring off the furniture. She'll be done in a second.
Maybe she's a fan of Spider-Gwen.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, she seems to be pretending to be Spider-Gwen.
Finally, Spider-Gwen has been advocated for.
but yeah, so like, so Spider-Gwen in her first intro, and anytime there was like a Spider-Gwen moment, she had that like kind of cool, like rock band kind of riff intro. The music across, yeah, it was so good. Like everyone had their own little thing. It was so great.
I think Uncle, what's the uncle's name? Aaron?
Oh, Aaron, yeah.
I think his when he's in costume as the baddie Prowler, right?
Yeah.
I think that there's a riff for him as well.
It was
you hate it because it scares you, or you hate it because you don't like it.
Like the music for Prowler, but also in the first multiverse machine scene. The music is like, I can't, it's like so like unnatural.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, stop. Yeah.
But the moment where Uncle Aaron is looking around the apartment for Miles and he's turned invisible, and you have that jump scare when he comes behind the TV.
Yeah.
And that riff hit that. I can't think of an MCU film which has given me like a scare like that for a long time. And I thought that was so cool.
It really was. That sound was incredible. Oh man, it made such an impact. Yeah, you're right. That like right from the very, very beginning where there's the big battle and everything. Supposedly the sort of underlying sound to it is a bull elephant's like attack noise. They want to use something that's like really powerful, but also has like a bit of a hint of like kind of melancholy to it almost. I mean, obviously they then, you know, sound mixed the hell out of it, but that sort of played, that was sort of some of the bass notes, and it was so good. I mean, the music and like the soundtrack across the board in this was so good. I mean, even just from the moment when we meet Miles and he's singing that Post Malone song and, you know, can't remember all the words and he's just kind of riffing a little bit. And like from that moment onwards, just like the music was something really special in this movie. The music and the score, for everything, like the comedic bits. Love that scene when Miles is first starting to like jump off the buildings and he's sort of like the sound of him kind of like the music they've got like all triumphant of him like kind of running up the stairs to like jump off the building, and then it's just like silence and his little sneakers going back down the stairs because he's jumping down the building. Just it was so good.
It's crazy, the start, like the soundtrack is as stacked as the cast list with big names, you know, the power, they like threw everything at this movie. And I think that's where like Sony were really, they must be different heads. They must be like different people who work on this, because like the money that Sony throw at every other superhero property that's live action, like never has this end product. You know, like we've seen a bunch of pretty naff Sony superhero movies. And then Into the Spider-Verse comes along, and either they went, all right, the problem that we've got is that we don't spend enough money, or it's a completely different team who just have a completely sort of different way of working. And I think they've created, you know, a superhero classic here. If we were doing all time lists of all superhero movies, I think it's gonna be doing well.
Totally. I think so. And but you know what I think? I mean, again, I don't know enough about like the background and kind of how this all came together. But the thing that like kind of smacked the most for me, like I think the movies from Sony that have really, really failed or felt like just kind of a mess, those are the ones where like there were all the kind of rumors or talk about like the studio would not like take their hands off it. Like they just like they kept like forcing a vision, or you know, there's always been like so much like stories about like the conflict between the director, the creative team, the vision, like all that stuff. This movie felt so much like, I mean, you're right, maybe it's like a new head or something, but someone just being like, okay, we trust you, just do it, let's see what happens. And if it wasn't such a massive budget, I would almost have sort of thought like, oh, it's just like a little like side project they promised someone to do like their dream project on it. But you know, yeah. So I think I kind of cannot believe this movie came out of Sony. Like it sort of blows my mind when I think about it.
And also came out when it did as well. Like it's such a curveball. Just think about where you were in the MCU, where we were in Tom Holland's Spider-Man. Like it's just... Mm-hmm. It's just this weird anomaly, but I completely agree that I think this is in the top three of my favourite superhero films ever. And this is actually the third highest rated superhero film on Rotten Tomatoes as well.
Oh, wow.
And I'm finding it difficult to think of... I've only got one film that's ahead of this, I think, in terms of my favourite superhero films ever.
It's Is it Winter Soldier?
It is a Winter Soldier.
So you think this movie, and I watched both of these movies last night, you think this movie is better than 2012 Avengers?
So for me, my top three would be this, Avengers and Winter Soldier.
So you think it's better than Infinity War and Endgame?
Infinity War and Endgame They're strange because they don't necessarily work on their own anymore for me. So like if we'd have been doing this before Endgame came out, Infinity War would have been right up there. But yeah, there's just something about this film. I think you mentioned it right at the start, Dan, when you use the word gripping. I think most of the time these days there will be a couple of points during a film, unless I'm in the cinema where I'm looking at my phone. This film has such pace and such intensity, and there's so much to look at all the time that you never want to take your eyes off it for a second. Yeah. And I think that's really hard to do these days with films. And I think that's why it's so brilliant.
And I agree. Yeah. Oh, you first, please go first.
Oh no, like the not being able to take your eyes off it, like that's how I feel about it as well. You just don't want to miss anything. Like, it's so clever, even down to like the way the police force calls themselves like PDNY instead of NYPD. It's like all these smart little things. You just, oh yeah, you just want to pay attention, like all the bits that were happening around it. I mean, even I think it's the best Stan Lee cameo of all time. Like, it's like all the bits just like hang together so well. Yeah, gripping. That is that's totally the right word for it.
So I watched this movie twice this week because I watched it once and then last night I was like, you know what? I just finished Avengers. It was 11:30 at night. I wasn't feeling too tired. So I was like, you know what? Let's go for a second spin on Into the Spider-Verse. And when I was doing that, I noticed that this movie has a ton of small details, you know, and I didn't pick up on any of, you know, I've scratched the surface of details, right? It's like you could go through it frame by frame, I feel, and see things. I really want to see like a frame by frame of where Peter Parker gets his head dipped in the multiverse soup. And there's loads of flashy stuff. I'm like, there's got to be loads of hidden chunks there. But I did notice quite a few specific details. So would you be ready for a little quiz on those specific details?
Okay. Lay it on.
Okay, so as I said, this is a detail-heavy quiz. So if you've been eagle-eyed in watching Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, you may have picked up on some of these. But if not, don't be hard on yourself because this is, like, solid. Right? So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, set of 7 questions, okay? If you get one right, then great work. So Martin versus Anna, write down your answers, and then I'll go through the answers afterwards. So we'll do this fairly quick. Listeners, if you're listening at home, grab a pen and paper. We're going to go through the answers straight away after this. I don't know if any of you tuned into the Tom Holland Instagram quiz.
It was terrible.
This will hopefully be more professional. But, you know, he's not...
It was cute. It was just super chaotic.
It was amazing. And I am glad we tuned in. But it was not. It made me think afterwards, has Tom Holland ever been to a pub quiz? you know, usually at a pub, you have that sort of like, they say the question and then they'll say it again and they'll give you a few minutes and there's some music and you can chat. And I guess this has the complications of being over Zoom, so they had to fill in dead air time. But
there's a lot less forehead in like, pub quizzes as well.
Oh,
we're not
staring
at people's foreheads.
So Tom Holland, we love you, but you know, work on your your pub quiz skills, mate. But if he does another one again, I'll be straight there. And especially it's good that it was for, you know, charity. Okay, right, 7 questions. So if you're playing along at home, get your answer books at the ready and we will go through the answers after this straight away. Let us know how you scored. Okay, so these are in sequential order of the movie. So we're starting with the opening credits. So in the opening credits, there is a scene where there's lots of lottery balls. And then one lottery ball is prominently in the front of the screen. And you can see the number and it's displayed clearly. What is the number on the lottery ball at the start of the movie? Okay, what is the number on the lottery ball at the start of the movie? Get your answers down. And if you can't remember, don't worry, we'll move on. The next question is, what is the street name that Miles slaps his sticker on before getting caught by his dad? So he's got his stickers, he's walking down the street, and he slaps them on like a newspaper bin and a few other things. And then slaps it on a street sign, trips over and gets caught by the PDNY car being driven by his dad. So what is the street name? Next up, what's the name of the new coffee shop in town? They drive past it when they're in the car as soon as he gets picked up. And it's a new coffee shop and they have a little dialogue about it. So yeah, what is the name of the new coffee shop in town? Question number three. Number four, what is the name of the new school that Miles attends? So I'm looking for the full name here. It's, you know, he, in the movie, he's obviously removed from his more neighborhood school and sent to one that seems a lot more prestigious based on his good grades. So yeah, what's the name of the new school that Miles attends? Are we all good? Are we good to move on?
Yeah.
Okay, next question. What book does Miles have to write a personal essay on? So in the movie, and this was a really good nugget in this movie, actually, is when he creeps into the classroom and makes the joke that makes Gwen Stacy laugh. In the background, they're watching a video about Doc Ock.
That's how Miles knew who she was, and we had that great moment where Peter B. Parker is like, "I'm going to check my gender biases," you know, because he thought the Doc would be a man.
I thought that was a great little weave in there. Okay, so what book does Miles have to write a personal essay on? Okay, so we've got two more questions to go. Question number six. What does Peter Parker steal from the Alchemax canteen? So this is Peter B. Parker. What does he steal from the Alchemax canteen? Martin, you're looking at me like you don't know what I'm on about.
No, I can't remember him stealing anything.
Oh, well, you need to pay closer attention then. Final question. Social media. Prominently in this movie, there is a in-universe social media channel advertised that has a very similar logo to Snapchat. What is the name of this social media channel?
It's a real social media network, isn't it?
Is it?
QQ.
No. It's a social media channel that is looks very similar to Snapchat, and it's advertised in this movie.
It's definitely QQ.
It's not, though. That's not the answer.
Can I add a bonus question, Dan, for you and Martin?
Yeah.
Okay. So in the alternate universe, you know the Cornetto trilogy of Simon Pegg fame? Yes, here in our universe.
Okay. I know the answer.
So in Times Square, there's an advertisement for the alternate universe title of the first movie in the Cornetto trilogy. What is the title of that movie?
Oh. Do you know that, Martin? I'll add in the answers. Listeners, you can add that as question number eight at home. Is what's the name of the Cornetto trilogy parody movie in this movie? Brilliant. Okay. I think there's also a parody Seth Rogen one as well, but I can't remember what that's called.
Something about him being a horse jockey or something. I don't quite remember. Okay. Give us the answers, Dan. I don't think I did very well.
Okay, here we're going for the answers. So, question number one, what's the number on the lottery ball at the start of the movie? The number is...
No clue. I put 99.
Oh, right. What did you get, Martin?
I put 8, because there's 8 legs of a spider.
Well, I can tell you it's the answer to the life, the universe and everything. It's 42. And that's because that's the number that's on the spider that's released from Alchemax. The spider has 42 on its back. I don't know whether it has any other significance out of that. I'll have a look. Okay, what was the street name that Miles slaps his sticker on before getting caught by his dad?
No idea. I just went with Ditko Street.
Our home is Stark Avenue.
Okay, it's Wythe Avenue. Oh. I don't know. I'm assuming
we're getting half a point for Avenue.
No, because we're not working in. We're dealing in absolutes, Martin.
Right.
Okay, you both looked at me as if you knew this one. What's the name of the new coffee shop in town?
Foam Party.
Martin, did you get?
I've got hot foam.
Anna, you are correct. Our first scorer of the evening. It's Foam Pie. Okay, question number four. What was the name of the new school that Miles Morales attended? Did either of you get it?
Visions.
Is it Visions? Anna? I put Visions.
Well, I asked for the full name. It's Brooklyn Vision Academy. I'll give you... I'm not working in half points. You didn't get it right. It's a brutal quiz. You know. If you're marking yourself at home, you can have half a point, but Anna and Martin, you don't get points. Okay, what book does Miles have to write a personal essay on? Martin?
Great Expectations.
Anna?
Yeah, Great Expectations.
Full marks, Great Expectations. Well done. Okay, question six. What does Peter Parker steal from the Alchemax canteen?
A bagel.
A bagel. Is the correct answer. You put donut.
It's so great. Because then when he's running away, he throws the bagel at one of the henchmen and it hits him in the head. And you know, where usually you'd see like a pow or whack or something, it says bagel. Where it's it's so good.
Brilliant. Okay, the Snapchat social media. Now, if I'm wrong about this,
this is what it says.
Well, under the logo that is prominently displayed in the movie, it's called Peekaboo. Oh.
It's called QQ.
It's called Peekaboo, dude.
Right, if you Google QQ Into the Spider-Verse, there are blogs about QQ's sponsorship of this film.
Well, if you Google Peekaboo Spider-Man, you will see screenshots that say Peekaboo and have the Spider-Man, the Snapchat logo.
So, I'm giving myself a point for QQ.
No, it's not true, though. It's not the result that I've got. But you... Is it just two Qs?
Yeah, QQ.
I'll give it to Martin if... You know, he did send a link.
So that's on his phone. That's on his phone, yeah? You're completely right. That's on his phone. But I'm asking about what was advertised. And if you Google... Peekaboo.
Okay, yeah, because you've got, instead of bridesmaids, you've got baby showers.
Yeah, so that's on his phone, but this is a Snapchat app.
Fine, I got one right, Anna wins, I'm going home.
But if you at home put QQ, you can have a point, because, you know, I'm generous to the listeners, but you guys, less generous. Okay, final question, question eight. What is the name of the Cornetto Trilogy parody movie that's advertised in Times Square? Did either of you obviously know this, Anna. Martin, so you don't score a point, Anna, because you know. Martin, do you know what it's called?
The real one or the parody name?
Parody one.
The parody one.
Oh, no. I know it's Shaun of the Dead, right?
Yeah,
so it's what Shaun of the Dead is called in Miles' universe.
Oh, it's called From Dusk Till Shaun.
Yep, that's it.
Classic. So there you go. If you, how did you both score?
I got three.
Three?
No, because you got great. I got Great Expectations, Foam Party, and Bagel.
Oh.
And you got two, Martin.
I got one.
You got one. You only got Great Expectations. Oh yeah.
She won't let me have QQ.
Right, well, 3-1 to Anna. Well done. Congratulations. We will have a more amenable quiz, I'm assuming, on our season wrap-up, right?
Yeah.
The next episode that we'll be here for is our Spider-Man season wrap-up episode. We're going to go through our rankings of Spider-Man movies. We're going to go through, a quiz, trivia. We're going to go through our thoughts about Spider-Man movies. Probably our thoughts as well about the movies that we're missing this year. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about Black Widow, Eternals, New Mutants and everything else, which has sort of fallen by the wayside.
Actually, today there is speculation that New Mutants might be soon to be released digitally, which seems like a much, much better idea. Like, I cannot believe they're still like holding on to this film. Just put it on Amazon, man. Just do it.
It's get rid of New Mutants. But I'm excited to see that. It'll be interesting to talk about it, if nothing else. So let's do it then. Like, let's have a final, you know, 20 seconds. What are your feelings about Into the Spider-Verse, the only animated movie we've reviewed on A Marvelous Lunch Break so far? I'm sure if there's Into the Spider-Verse 2, which it looks like it's going to be, we'll review that as well. But what is your closing thoughts on this movie, Anna?
I love this movie so much. I think it is a truly like masterful blend of so much humor and so much heart. Like, rewatching this again, I think this is maybe my third time watching it. And there still were moments where I got like really teary, like the Stan cameo, Miles's jump off the building. And just it for a superhero movie that was animation, that had so many crazy elements to it, it felt really honest and just really unbelievably heartfelt. And I'm so happy that a movie like this got made, not just because of how great it was for like artists and just like a new way of doing something, but like, I mean, we didn't really touch on like the great representation that there is in it. I think this movie was an unbelievable slam dunk. I think everyone should watch it. Everyone should watch it.
Martin, closing thoughts.
I love this film. I think it blends together so many of the things that we want from a superhero film. Great team-ups, villains that are difficult to defeat, that have a purpose, stakes that are at a reasonable level, comedy, a great soundtrack, hope. This is just a great film, and it really is that hidden gem. I think it is that film that lots of people will have bypassed because they'll think it's like X-Men from the 90s, or they'll think it's like that weird strain of Batman films that was popular in the early 2000s. And it's definitely something that more people need to see because it is exceptional. Not least because it has three brilliant train scenes.
Oh my God!
I mean, we might have to save the cacophony of train scenes on this one for, you know, the wrap up. But I mean, it is packed full of them, and I think
there's trains everywhere.
You know, if we dissected. So I read online though that apparently Stan Lee is. If you paused on train scenes, apparently you can see Stan Lee in most carriages because every animator wanted to be the one who drew Stan Lee. So they drew him in like pretty much every carriage of the train, which I think is really interesting. And I really want to go try that out and just whack a pause on and see if I can find him. But I mean, chew fucking chew. What a bunch of train scenes. This is incredible. I tell you what, let's save the train scenes for the wrap up episode. We'll keep listeners waiting, unfortunately, for our train scene segment. But I think what I have to say about this movie is that it is, you know, one of those movies that defines superhero movies, I think, as a new genre of movie, you know, that crosses many other genres. So, you know, we've said, you know, spy thriller with Winter Soldier, this movie, that movie, all this sort of thing. But superhero movies as a genre, I think they're fairly well established now. And I think this was something completely fresh and new within that genre, after it's had like a 10-year lifespan already. So great, you know, I'm into it. Let's see what the next few years of superhero movies brings. And if they're like this, then I'm sold. I'm completely in. It's so exciting. But want to hear your views as well, listeners. So get us on our Instagram if you want to hear more. Anna, what's the details for that?
A Marvelous Lunch Break.
And if listeners want to follow you, where can they find you?
They can get me on Instagram, Anna Marvelous, 2 N's, 2 L's.
And Martin, what about you?
Martin Loves on Instagram.
And I'm assuming it's a resounding, this movie stays, right? We are not dropping any
superhero
movies. otherwise, we'll be back here shortly with our season 3 wrap-up episode. So don't feel this is the end. We've still got more to go. But otherwise, have a great time between now and then. Stay safe out there. Thank you very much for tuning in. And goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Post credits, really quick.
Yeah.
Miguel, I thought that was brilliant. Really enjoyed it. So he's
That's where Oscar Isaacs comes in. I get it. Yeah. Right.
So he's the
Should we recognize that version of Spider-Man?
So that's Spider-Man 2099 so he's like he pops up in the comics all the time. He's Spider-Man from 2099. And he very often gets mixed up in timey shit.
Yeah. Okay.
But a great character. You know, once again, a classic Spider-Man. So if he's popping up in into the Spider-Verse 2, then it's going to get weird, man. I'm excited for that.
But then also, my God, could they have gotten more meta than him going into the Spider-Man like meme? It was so funny. And so unexpected. I loved it. I think one of the best post-credits.
Well, I'm excited for Spider-Verse 2, but I'm also excited for our wrap-up episode. Right now, I'm excited for a cup of tea and a little bit of shut-eye. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. Have a great time between now and the next time we talk. See you.
Bye.
Bye.